serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio.
Thank you for tuning in for this Unity Partner Program. Unity Online Radio partners with spiritual leaders from organizations whose mission and messages complement Unity's. We are pleased to bring you this program on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to the Yoga Hour, living the eternal way. Offering insights and practices for spiritually conscious living today with Reverend Ellen Grace O'Brien from the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment in San Jose, California. To ask questions or join the discussion, email us at yogahour@unity.fm. Now, here's your host, Reverend Ellen Grace O'Brien.
Welcome to the Yoga Hour, our time to open our hearts and our minds to the infinite. I'm Ellen Grace O'Brien, and I'll be sharing with you today some insights and practices from the spiritual path of yoga, the ancient science of self and God realization. Yoga is a Sanskrit word that means oneness, union, or unity, the bringing together of our attention and our awareness with our essential spiritual nature, to be restored to our original wholeness. Yoga is abiding in the conscious awareness of our true self, where we are restored to this original oneness. Yoga is self-realization. It's knowing our true spiritual nature and living in harmony with it. Today's topic is living seva, yoga and the world. And today we'll be exploring how yoga or self-realization takes us out of the world and brings us back into it, meaning that this spiritual awakening takes us out of worldly consciousness, takes us out of seeing the world as an object for us to use, and opens our eyes to seeing the world as world and everyone, everything in it as sacred. Seva, or selfless service, is the natural response that comes when our eyes are opened in that way. We're blessed today with two guests, Nipun Mehta and Dr. Sriram Shamasundar. Nipun is the founder of Charity Focus, which now has over 300,000 members who live life joyfully creating ripples that continue to draw more and more people into the circle of giving. Over a decade ago, Nipun, who was working then at Sun Microsystems, and three friends decided to offer an act of pure giving as an experiment, and they ended up building a website for a homeless shelter. Since then, not only have over 4,500 websites been built for nonprofit organizations at no charge, but a loose-knit organization has taken place. This is Charity Focus, and it has given rise to several new innovative organizations that have genuine giving at their core. Several thousand charity-focused volunteers now stretch around the world, and this organization continues to evolve while operating on a budget of less than $100 a month. So you already have a sense of this miracle worker in our midst this morning. And then we have with us also Dr. Sriram Shamasundar, who is a contributing physician for the Global Health Clinical Scholars Program at UCSF. And he received the Young Physician of the Year Award by the American College of Physicians. And his service work takes him around the world to places of the greatest need, including recent work after the earthquake in Haiti. Dr. Sri is interested in the delivery of comprehensive health care in resource-poor settings. So in addition to looking forward to contributing to the Global Health Clinical Scholars Program at UCSF, he has recently returned from providing clinical care for 5 months in rural Burundi with the organization Village Healthworks. And I think coming up, if he hasn't been there already, is work in both Rwanda with Partners in Health and rural Karnataka in India. So those are our distinguished guests this morning. And before we dive into our topic of seva, about being fully awake in the world as one, let's begin with a moment of meditation. Let's open our hearts and our minds to the infinite, acknowledging that one reality called by many names, that which is the support and substance of all that is. Right where we are, right now, this divine essence is present as you, as me, as everyone. It is within us, it is around us, it is between us. In this moment, let's simply move our attention from the periphery of our awareness into the depths. Let's become aware of our essential nature that is beyond words and thoughts. Peace, emanating from the essence of our being, pervades the mental field, our emotional nature, and our physical bodies. As we abide in this peace, we let it overflow now as blessing for all beings everywhere. Let us affirm and know that we are ever receptive to divine inspiration guiding us toward right action. With compassionate hearts and open minds, living in a sacred world. Yoga is a spiritual path for awakening from the mistaken sense of being separate, separate from the source, separate from one another, separate from the earth, separate from our own bodies and minds. And the path offers many different avenues or ways of reaching the goal to accommodate different temperament types of individuals. So for those who are devotional, we have bhakti yoga. For those of an intellectual bent, there's jnana yoga. For those who are inclined to use a step-by-step methodology to explore the inner realms of meditation, there's raja yoga or yogas of technique. Then there's karma yoga, the way of selfless service for those who are inclined toward action. And all of the yogas are paths to oneness consciousness, ways to break beyond the boundaries of ego. And karma yoga offers the way to do this by letting go of ego-driven motives in our actions, to release the sense of ownership, the belief that we are the doers, and to let go of our attachment to particular outcomes, the fruits of our action. With karma yoga, it's not so much what we do, but how we do it. That's the key. The highest expression of karma yoga is when we can engage in serving others without expectation of reward or personal gain. So there are many paths in the garden of yoga, but it does certainly seem that whichever one we take, they all end up with karma yoga. Whether one sets out on the path of devotion, wisdom, or meditation, eventually all the paths converge in service. Because once we see the world as our own self, it really can be no other way. So Nipun and Sri, you are both such exemplars of what it means to practice karma yoga. I'd like to know how your life journeys led you there. How did you come to your own awakening to seva as a way of life?
Helen, thank you for having us on the call. It's a pleasure. I suppose I'll go first, Sri. This is the kind of question where it's like, where did it start? It's very difficult to answer in so many ways. But I think for me, there was this fundamental question when I was young. It's like, oh, where did I come from? Where am I going? What happens at the time of death? And these were sort of gnawing questions. And, you know, just through the cultural conditioning, you kind of tend to forget those. And I think for me, it came back into focus when I was in college. And I said, you know, I'm going to graduate and I have to choose all between all these careers and paths. And, you know, what am I going to do? And at some point, I think the sort of dominant paradigm pattern was overtaken by some, my seeking nature. And I said, you know, I should find out what I'm really all about and what really makes me happy. And I realized that it was small acts, doing small things for other people instead of doing lots of things for my own self, for my own ego, that made me happy. So I started on that venture, and, you know, our first project, as you mentioned, was building websites for nonprofits, and we did it collectively, and that one thing led to another, and started, you know, a movement of sorts of generosity, which is loosely known as charity focus, but, you know, it's really something much more fundamental than an organization even. You know, I think it's something that makes us come alive. So that's been my inspiration.
So it started in your heart. It started in your heart with those deep questions about what really matters, and what are we really here for. And Sri, I have a sense that your journey has some similar components to it.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having us. I think in college, it started for me as well, and it initially started in a very political kind of socioeconomic, being a interested medical student or a pre-med and seeing so many socioeconomic disparities and realizing that there's a tradition of kind of doctor activists and like Paul Farmer and Albert Schweitzer and, you know, so many of the South African apartheid doctors that really challenged the system. And the more I got into medicine, I started to try to address kind of the physical disparities. And I realized that, you know, I kept seeing so much death around me and a lot of suffering. And I realized that, you know, the amount of stillness that I needed to have inside of myself is really the direction that I wanted to, you know, serve. I think with seeing a lot of suffering both abroad and at home, I felt like, you know, my service is also going to come on a kind of personal level, where unless somebody's dying and you have a certain amount of stillness, then you can't really, you know, help them. So I think that was kind of my realization initially, coming from a socioeconomic kind of physical disparity approach to moving towards, okay, on a personal level, how do you cultivate a certain amount of stillness that is useful to people when they're facing, you know, the moments in their lives that are really challenging and they're transitioning to that death. So.
Mm-hmm. So you came from two different avenues of work in the world, from the technology industry and from medicine, but both touching the heart about what really matters and what makes a difference. Already, you know, we've begun to look into what SEVA really means. SEVA simply means service, but it's so much more than what we do. It has to do with the quality of heart and mind that we bring, work offered without ego attachment, non-doership. You know, the big question that comes is, you know, wow, you know, how do we do that? You know, that's a question that, you know, people have been asking for a long time. I came across a poem by Hafez that I thought just captured this spirit of seva, or selfless service. The title is "The Sun Never Says." even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me.
Mm-hmm.
Look what happens with a love like that. It lights up the whole sky.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
So what would you say is the greatest learning that you have received walking this path of Seva or Karma Yoga? Because I sense that, you know, it's an orientation, it's a way of being involved, but it's also a path of enlightenment or unfolding to greater awareness. So, you know, so far, what would you say is the greatest learnings that have come to, you know, both of you in your work?
I think for me, go ahead, Nipun.
No, you go ahead. It's all yours.
So I think there's this quote by this Dr. Saint, you know, this man who works in that worked in India, Dr. Venkataswamy. And he talks about, you know, he's kind of created the most efficient eye care hospital in the world. And he's also very spiritually grounded. And he has this quote where he says, when you grow in spiritual consciousness, we identify with all that there is in the world. It is ourselves we are helping. It is ourselves we are healing. And I think for me, that is the real awakening where I'm not actually helping anybody. You know, it's really whether I'm in Burundi or Haiti, it's kind of I'm attempting to serve in a way that is useful to the people I'm serving, but it is also quite an inner transformation. And to feel like you're actually changing people's lives, you know, in almost every respect, you're changing your own life first and foremost.
Nipun?
That's great, Sri. Sri, I think you took my response there. I would second that. You know, I mean, I think one of the biggest, the way I would frame it is you know, when you start out on this path of service, you look at the world around you and you say, it's broken, it needs to be fixed. There's so many things that are wrong with it. I just need to go out and help people. And you're moved in that way. And that's a reasonable response of the heart. But then I think the more and more I did that, more and more I practiced that, what I found was that, you know, the greatest gift you can give somebody is your presence. Even to the hungriest person, even to the sickest person, even to the most disturbed person, if you're first not fully there, then whatever you offer to them at the level of you know, material, it's just not going to be as satisfying for them. And so I think more and more I realized that you had the great giants who've shaken up society, people like Gandhi, who worked from this very base, and they said, you know, there is impact in the world. You do have to change the world at some physical level as well. That's certainly important. But it has to be coupled with an inner transformation. And if it's coupled with that inner transformation, it has a ripple effect that is profound and that, you know, continues to ripple far beyond the sort of end of its material succession. So I think that's, I would say, the power of inner transformation along with impact, but really combining both of them and not just focusing on that external impact has been probably the greatest shift that I've seen. And it affects all kinds of things, you know. It starts to affect things like scale, how you view scale. You know, if it's about solving problems on the outside, then it's a very reasonable sort of corollary to that to say, hey, this was a great thing that happened between you and I, and let's scale this out to the whole world and make the whole world a better place.
That is such a beautiful...
There's something that's lost.
That is such a beautiful vision, and I want to just hold on for a moment to that idea of, you know, what is going on with us individually and with just one person can be a seed for a global vision. When we come back from the break, we're going to look at How we determine what is ours to do, how we become involved in service. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. You are listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. To support this ministry, go to www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Your contribution helps us broadcast messages of love and inspiration throughout the world.
Have you ever had moments where your life just seems ordinary? I'm sure at some point we all have. Hi, I'm Jamie Sanders, host of Spirituality Today here on Unity Online Radio. And I want to invite you to join me and Reverend Carla McClellan, along with the music of Bouquet Cachols, at Unity Village for the retreat From the Ordinary to the Extraordinary. During this three-day retreat, you can take a break from the fast pace of life and relax in a sacred container of all is well. Together, we'll build a community of support that will reflect who you truly are. You'll see that nothing is wrong or even needs to be fixed. You'll simply establish clarity about who you are and what life intentions are most meaningful to you. You'll learn skills for manifesting your dreams into physical reality and how to move from the ordinary to living fully an extraordinary life. Together we'll laugh, pray, sing, and spend time in nature and silence as we remove our mask and take authentic action toward living life full throttle. Join us March 17th through the 20th, 2011. To learn more, go to www.unityonline.org and click on Retreat Events, or to reserve your space, call 866-34-UNITY. That's 866-348-6489. And you can get a discount on the retreat if you register before February 14, 2011. Spring break at Unity Village. It's time to come home.
Spirit of Recovery is the place where spirituality and recovery meet, where we support your spiritual growth. Reverend Anna Schaus, PhD, interviews down-to-earth guests who share with you how they keep going and growing in recovery. Spirit of Recovery is the place to get practical tips and to join in lively discussions on topics that matter to recovering people. This program welcomes everyone who wants to know more about recovery. Join Anna and her guests live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Pacific on Spirit of Recovery, where we talk about what keeps you growing, only on Unity FM. The voice of an awakening world.
You can join the discussion now by calling us toll free at 888-55-UNITY. That's 888-558-6489. Now, back to the program.
You're listening to The Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way with Reverend Ellen Grace O'Brien. We now return to The Yoga Hour.
Welcome back to The Yoga Hour. I'm Ellen Grace O'Brien, and I'm joined this morning by Nipun Mehta and Dr. Sriram Shamasundar. We're talking about service and how it can be a spiritual way of life, a path of awakening, and bless everyone in its wake. On one of their websites, they quote Gandhiji as saying, "The fragrance always remains on the hand that gives the rose." In this segment, we'll be exploring what's required of us to practice selfless service and how we discover what is ours to do. So first the question, you know, what is required? Nipun, in the interview with you in Parabola magazine, you said, there's this myth that you need to have things before you can give. I always say that service doesn't start when you have something to give. It blossoms naturally when you have nothing left to take. There's a subtle difference. It's about renouncing your desire, your want. As soon as you let that go, whatever you do is an act of service. So that's the fundamental shift that takes place in the heart and the mind, getting over the self, not thinking so much about having something to give or get, but simply to serve. So that sounds pretty straightforward. Nipun, how does one approach that? And how do we know, you know, what is ours to do?
You know, it's one of those things that has, like the layers of the onion, there's so many nuances to even understanding something of that sort. Now, I can't say that I've understood it to its depth, but I think early on in my journey, I had this idea of, like, and society gives you this idea that you need to have something before you can give it. You know, it's like it's a very reasonable thing. How can you give something to someone if you don't have it? And that assumes a very material view of the world. And it's like I need to have stuff to give stuff. Well, that's true. But you already have a lot of innate gifts. And those gifts can be shared in abundance with everybody at any time. It's just that you need to change the eyes through which you look at the world. You know, you got green goggles on, everything looks green. So it's like, how do you take the goggles off? You know, and the problem is that we actually have layers and layers of goggles, you know, so we have so many goggles on, so we have to just keep patiently peeling all these layers one at a time. It's a process, I would say, and I think it starts in the present moment. You know, I don't think it's about achieving X, Y, or Z, let alone in this material plane, but also spiritually. You know, I don't think it's about, like, getting there and then starting to serve. It's not about getting older and retiring and then starting to serve. It's not about, like, feeling comfortable with yourself and then starting to serve. I think service can start in any atmosphere. It just requires a shift in your framing of that situation. So, in that sense, you could just go. I mean, I was a computer science person. I was a technology guy. You know, and I said, how can I use my skills to serve the world? And at that time in the Silicon Valley, it was like, okay, hey, go help, people helping the homeless folks, maybe help them build a website, which was our first project, you know. And so I think things of that sort, where you, whatever you have, you just, if you look, if you say, how can this be a gift to the world, and you keep experimenting with that, I think it leads very much like a flashlight. You know, it takes you from one step to another to a third, and pretty soon you've crossed the whole way.
Yeah, that has certainly been my experience as well. That, you know, I find that sometimes people are working so hard to try and figure out what their Svadharma is, you know, their that's connected to their soul destiny. What is the work that they're supposed to be doing in the world that has to do with their talents and their abilities and their responsibilities and so on and so forth. And they are spending so much time trying to figure it out that it becomes paralyzing and they don't do anything. But really, if we just open our eyes and look at right where we are, and, you know, what we have innately, what we're drawn to, what is right in front of us, and we begin to serve there, then those innate gifts begin to be developed, the doors open, you know, life itself comes to meet us. And Sri, I noticed on one of your blogs, your response to the question, you know, what can I do? I thought was brilliant. You know, you said get involved with a group doing work in a country you care about. So, you know, there's people doing good work, and if there's something you're drawn to, it doesn't mean you have to start something huge in order to be involved. You can bring your energy to those who are already doing it and begin to learn that way. And then secondly, you said Build your own capacity by doing your inner transformational work, which is what you talked about early in the program today. And third, you said that the third thing you can do is stop complaining when you don't experience your life as being perfectly the way you would like it to be. So I thought those were three excellent tips. And so do you want to say any more about any of those three things?
I mean, I think that the idea of, you know, a lot of times we have so many choices in front of us, and to really look at any given moment, I think, you know, exactly what you and Nipun are saying is that starting local and approaching the present moment. You know, I feel like in medicine, a lot of the times, like, the real work that I do is just being present for people. You know, we're not really curing, it's very difficult to, you know, eradicate disease or cure people, but it's quite easy to be present and cultivate a spirit of being present in any given moment. And I think that, you know, the idea of kind of hopping around in the world and serving, it's really, you don't have to do that. It's mostly kind of staying local, cultivating a certain amount of inner stillness and being present. Because I think in even my day-to-day work in the hospital, that's kind of the best gift that I can give anybody. So
that's beautiful. So really, if we look at the heart of your three tips, they really are saying in different ways, be present, you know,
yeah.
Serve where you are, build your capacity to be present. And the stop complaining part, I think, has to do with being present as well, doesn't it?
Exactly.
You know, there's an interesting verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, it occurs twice in the Gita. So I always pay attention to those verses that show up more than once, especially. And that's the verse that says it's better to do one's own work and fail in the attempt than to do the work of another and succeed. I'm sure you're both familiar with that verse. And I wonder, Nipun, how do you think that relates to this engagement in seva?
The way I frame that is that we're all given different gifts. We're all planted in different waters in our context, and we have different conditions, and we have different tendencies, the inner tendencies to respond to certain situations. You know, and if you look at a lot of the saints, you see that at certain times in certain contexts, you have certain kinds of saints, and then you have you know, in different times, you have, you know, saints who do different kinds of things. You know, there will be some who will do miracles and some will not do any miracles. And so I think it's a lot of it comes down to a dynamic response. This idea of being present that both of you were talking about, I think it's about not having like a recipe for service. Hey, this is what people, if you want to be service-oriented, this is what you do. You take this class, then you do this, then you do this, and then you start helping other people who really need some help. I think it's not quite like that. I think it's about like accepting where you are, opening your eyes to what is in front of you, and then responding with a heart of compassion. And I think when you do that, you realize that no two people are going to be doing the same thing. That's just, you know, it's impossible for that to happen.
Yeah, I think so, and I, you know, it's a verse that I come back to again and again, and it keeps opening for me. And you know, I think one of the teachings that's contained in it is about, you know, not comparing ourselves to someone else, not trying to be somebody else, you know, looking to some outer standard or some outer way, because for each of us, living authentically is the way to liberation. And so if we try to do what really is not ours to do, While it might, you know, bring fame or, you know, it might look good, it's not going to be the authentic path of opening our hearts and purifying our minds and leading us to soul freedom. Sri, what would you say about that verse?
I think exactly, you know, what both of you are saying is that the amounts of gifts, I think, you know, in my work in Burundi or Haiti, I think that, you know, some of the patients, you know, in Haiti, that there was a couple of patients that were paralyzed after the earthquake, and they are sitting still on a board and, you know, basically they turn to each other and they spend their times kind of joking with each other and trying to cheer each other up. And, you know, in any given moment, you know, they had 20 seconds that changed their lives dramatically. And in that moment, all they can do is, you know, they can physically serve the person that is directly next to them. And I think that some of those, you know, some of those paths where wherever you find yourself, you have that ability that what kind of comes naturally, and as you kind of explore things that start to resonate, just kind of worlds and the universe opens up in ways that you wouldn't expect. And I think if you direct yourselves in paths, you know, to try to seek fame or you know, other paths that don't necessarily gel with yourself, you're going to come across you know, certain amounts of resistance, or it's just not going to feel kind of the same opening up that happens when you're going down the path that I think you're supposed to go into. And that usually entails kind of an expansion of love, of seeing, mm-hmm. you know, people as family that mm-hmm. aren't necessarily related to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, when we get in the world striving for success, and we may be successful, and, you know, my sense of that is that when ego's in the lead and we accomplish something, you know, we have a sense of relief when we accomplish it, like, ah, you know, I did that. Thank goodness it's done. But when we're in this graceful flow, in which we are present and we are aware that something greater, a power greater, is at work, there is a sense of awe and connectedness and really love, you know, as you say. You know, one question I want to ask both of you, because I sense that you know, neither one of you has held back from, you know, diving all the way into the deep end of service, engaging with people, you know, that you're full on without holding yourselves back. And so, you know, one of the questions that people have about service is, you know, how do you keep from getting burned out? You know, and some people are afraid even to open their hearts because they already feel they have so much to do. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard this. So, Nipun, what is your thought about that?
I think it actually relates back to the earlier question also, of finding your own dharma, you know. And I think there's this sense of, I recently posted something on Google Buzz, which was a story of a snowflake, you know, and it's like on a branch tip, you know, like 9 million snowflakes are already on the branch tip, and all of a sudden, like the 9 million and the first snowflake comes on, and the weight tips over, and the branch falls, and it's a whole different world now. And I think we all want to be that 9 million and first snowflake, you know, instead of just seeing that each one just has its own property, everybody contributes to it. We're in this lineage of conditions from the past to the present, going towards the future. And just seeing, I think accepting that is a very critical part of it. And I think once you accept that, then it's like, okay, I don't need to go out and do great big things. Looking at it another way, the greatest, biggest thing you can do is what is in front of you. As Mother Teresa said, you can do no great big things. You know, you can just do small acts with great love. So I think if we come to that understanding, then it's not about you know, going out and doing all this, or going all out, or fixing the world, or healing the world. It's actually just about healing ourselves, and that happens with any action, with every action. And if we take that perspective, it takes the weight off of things, you know, and you're just like, okay, yeah, hey, you know, I can do that. It's one small act. Let me just put as much love as I can. and you do that, and it feels light, and you're like, yeah, okay, great, you know, and you move on. And then you're not so burnt out. But if you start to carry the load of the whole world, and it's like, oh my God, there's so many problems, and now I'm going to fix it, then at some point you start, the negativity that you had yourself ends up creating more problems in the world. So I would just say, you know, figure a way out to be light. And I think a way to be light is to understand your small place in the grand scheme of things, and know that every role is a small role. We are all just instruments in the larger unfolding. I think that understanding is critical to the lightness. And Sri might have a bunch to add, too.
I mean, I think in terms of if you know some people that serve with great love, they're kind of the least burnt out amongst us, you know, and the least overwhelmed. And I think that actually kind of doing the work and opening yourself up to serving, and if you do it without a severe attachment to kind of getting somewhere or results, there, you know, it opens up so many worlds that I don't think that burning out is really a concern. I think it's probably an intellectual concern from a distance, and, you know, not to say that some of the work isn't, it to stare reality in the face in some situations is quite, it can be a difficult, but I think that idea of opening yourself up, actually, if you get in the midst of it and are doing it, it actually is the anti-overwhelming effect and the anti-burning out effect.
Yes, and it seems that there is this energy that opens up, you know, from within when we know that we're in our right place, and when we're not grasping, you know, for some grand result, but we're just being present in the moment. And so I want to take this moment to thank you all for being with us, and let you know we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back in our conversation about seva, bringing a presence into all that we do. In just a moment, we'll be right back.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Hi, I'm Reverend Ellen Devenport, author of The Five Principles and host of Absolute Living on Unity Online Radio.
And I'm Reverend Carla McClellan, manager of retreats and workshops at Unity Village.
And we want to talk to you about God.
We're planning a retreat at Unity Village the first weekend in April, specifically to talk about our changing concepts of the divine as we grow and mature spiritually. Some people may be questioning their beliefs. Some might even be afraid they've become atheists. But it's all part of a healthy spiritual process that Unity supports.
You're invited to join us on April 1st through 3rd at Unity Village as we explore God for grown-ups. We have planned a fabulous 3-day experience where you can rediscover your understanding of God in a safe environment with like-minded people. When you join us for this retreat, you'll not only hear Ellen Devenport speak, but you'll participate in prayer partnerships, journaling, and meditation on the beautiful grounds at Unity Village. And of course, you can experience the renewal of spirit that comes with every Unity retreat.
We've also planned a panel discussion with Unity ministers who don't always see eye to eye on spiritual topics, but that's part of a God for grown-ups.
To reserve your space in this powerful retreat, go to unityvillage.org and click on retreat/events, or call us at 866-34-UNITY. That's 866-348-6489.
We'll see you at Unity Village in the spring.
I'm one with you. celebrated Unity minister and author Eric Butterworth tells us, "The exciting thing is that wherever you may be along the way of unfoldment and self-realization, no matter what the problems or challenges you may face, there is always more in you, the mystery of God in you, the Christ in you, which means your potential for healing, for overcoming, for prosperity. There is no limit." Join us each week for Discovering Eric Butterworth, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Central Time with host Reverend Tom Thorpe, right here on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world.
You're listening to the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way with Reverend Ellen Grace O'Brien. If you have a question, please submit it via email at yogahour@unity.fm and we will respond. Now, back to the Yoga Hour.
Welcome back to the Yoga Hour. I'm Ellen Grace O'Brien, and my guests today are Nipun Mehta and Dr. Sriram Shamasundar. To learn more about their service work, you can go to charityfocus.org. And there you can learn a lot about the different avenues of service that have opened up through the initial inspiration for Charity Focus, charityfocus.org. Selfless service opens our hearts and our eyes to the awesome beauty of the souls around us. When the heart breaks open, we find joy in serving. And my experience has been that it's profound to see how compassion and generosity arise, certainly beyond what I see as my individual capacity to bring either forth. And I know that you both have such valuable stories and examples of heart opening to share. So, Nipun, will you start for a few minutes telling us about this vision of gift economy and perhaps bless us with your encounter with the rickshaw driver in India?
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, this idea, we fundamentally started by doing small acts of kindness. And when you do these small acts, you certainly see the benefit. But over time, these small acts create affinities and starts to create kind of a social capital. And if these dots start to connect, it creates a very different kind of a paradigm. And we all stumbled into it. I don't think it's a new idea. I think it's a very old, rather ancient idea. But it's rather interesting that we found it in the internet world. But essentially, this idea of a gift economy is, if you think of it as you're paying toll for the car behind you. Now, I mean, we can, you know, perhaps, you know, some people have experienced that, some people have done that. But what if there was a culture where everybody was committed to paying toll for the person behind them? And it's like it's a very different world than you know, someone in another lane saying, "Hey, we're all going to pay our own toll, and we're just going to be worried about ourselves. I don't really care for somebody I can't see or somebody that is behind me, somebody that is, looks like a stranger on the surface." So if, you know, which of the two lanes do you want to be in? You know, and it's like you want to be in the lane that's connected to each other where there is this care. And so the question started, we started to see these patterns, and so the question became, how do you manifest this? You know, what are different examples in which we can create, you know, this kind of a shoulder massage from one person to another, and we're all in this giant circle, you know. So how can you create possibilities? How can we even imagine these possibilities in this current context? So you take an example like Karma Kitchen, which is a restaurant that we take on Sundays in three different cities. But I volunteer at the one in Berkeley, and, you know, you walk in, you have a meal like a regular restaurant, and at the end of the meal, your check reads zero. And why is it zero? Because someone before you made a gift that allowed your meal to be zero, you know, your check to be zero, and then you get to pay forward for people after you, people you don't know. And, you know, would such a thing like that exist? Would it survive? You know, if you trust people, if you leave it to them to contribute for people after them, I mean, wouldn't people just take and run? And the answer is, in our experience, no. You know, 3 years in Berkeley is still going. The chain is still going. So if you trust people to do that, I mean, certainly you have to, you know, guard for the boundary cases and work around it, and you have to generate a lot of love. I mean, there's many things to create this gift economy possibility. But I think it's possible. And so, kitchen-like restaurants here. And the rickshaw driver was taking me from point A to point B. I start talking to him. I learned about his life and how much he makes, you know, a few bucks that he makes every day, and he's pretty happy. And we start talking about his life, and when it's time for me to pay my fare, you know, I give him a whole, I think, like something like 300 rupees extra, or maybe like 250 rupees extra. Which is, you know, $5-6. And I had that, and I said, you know how we were talking about that restaurant that operates on a gift economy basis? What if you run your, you know, rickshaw on that basis? He's like, what do you mean? He's like, everybody frames these rickshaw drivers as these corrupt people that have no morals, and they're just out to take, and they take people through long routes, and they misguide them, and they charge them extra. And, it's, you know, and that's sort of the usual stereotype. And I said, what if you just turn it around and you say, hey, I'm just going to, you know, charge you. I'm not going to charge you. It's like your ride has been a gift from someone before you. And if you'd like, if you're moved by this experience and you want to gift this experience to somebody after you, then you can do that. And the guy it was unbelievable. I mean, the guy was like, oh, my God. You know, he started initially, he couldn't believe it. And then he's looking at me and saying, oh, my God. Yeah, he's like, are you totally out of it? And he says, no, you can't trust me, you know. And he's telling me that I can't trust him, you know. I said, too late, I already trusted you. And it was just a very beautiful, energizing encounter. And that story, incidentally, led to a real rickshaw 7 days a week. Where it's operating on this way, and it's actually sustaining itself just fine. And now we're thinking of doing another rickshaw because it's working just fine. And it's such a stark contrast from, you know, the customer saying, no, on being on the lookout, having fear, and saying, oh, this guy's going to take me the wrong way. And the other person shrinking from receiving that consciousness and saying, no, you know, I'm actually not doing that, but I'm going to show you, you know. And that dynamic is so different than a gift economy where the guy says, look, I trust you. May there be goodness in the world. I believe in this abundance, and here I am. You know, I live by it. I'm walking it, and you are the recipient of it. And that just changes everything.
It really does, and
it's a powerful thing.
It's amazing to what happens when we meet one another in the world soul to soul. And we call forth the goodness that is innate. I mean, certainly it's a practice, and I imagine that there are lots of adventures along the way, but fundamentally that is the shift, is this meeting soul to soul. We have just a few minutes left in the show this morning, but Sri, I would like to go to you for a moment and just hear one of your experiences of this soul to soul meeting in places that have been difficult, where people are really suffering.
Sure. So I spent 5 months in Burundi, and sure, a lot of your listeners don't know where Burundi is, and I don't think I knew where it was before I spent so much time there, but it's in East Africa, and in 2006, and the WHO called it the poorest country on the planet, and there's about 50 doctors there for 8 million people. And so when I kind of showed up there, I think that some of the story, you know, some of the things I saw, I wasn't prepared to see. And, you know, over the course of 5 months, I think we lost about 9 or 10 children to malnutrition that passed away. And I think one of the subtle shifts that come about, one of this, on kind of the last week that I was in Burundi, there was a woman who had quite a large tumor and just had excruciating amounts of pain. And we took her in the bus to the capital city because we needed some surgical services that we couldn't provide at our little clinic. And along the bus route, you know, you're bumping around, and it's the absolutely excruciatingly painful. And we waited with her for multiple hours, and kind of I talked to the surgeons, and we were trying to figure out if we can get surgery for her. And she hadn't eaten all day. And we went and got her a small amount of food, and I brought back the food to her, and there was just this immense amount of gratitude. And I think that the shift in me is that, you know, I think that a couple days later, our flights were delayed coming out of Kenya, and there was multiple Americans and Europeans. All of us were like getting frustrated and waiting in lines. And there's, you know, some of these people all over the world, there's just very little expectations, and the amount of gratitude for small amounts, and the willingness to kind of persevere in faces of tremendous challenges, while, you know, a lot of us can not look at with gratitude our present moment when we have kind of immense opportunities and things in front of us. I think those were some of the stories that kind of shaped my approach. Now,
thank you so much, Sri, and I want to offer my deepest gratitude to you both, Nipun Mehta and Sri Ram Shamasundar, for this beautiful conversation on Seva this morning, helping us to recognize the gift of life. I'm going to close this morning's program with a quote that they have on their website from Howard Thurman. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. It's been a joy to share this Yoga Hour with you. Join me next week to learn about self-care practices for the season from Ayurveda and yoga, how to cultivate health and well-being on all levels during this season and enhance your natural energy. I'll have SB Guardiola, the director of Body Mind Transformations, with me. Until then, let your inner light shine into the world. Share your peace and your joy with all you meet.
Thank you for tuning in to the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way, with Reverend Ellen Grace O'Brien. Join us every Thursday morning at 10 Central, 8 a.m. Pacific, for practical, purposeful methods for spiritually conscious living every day. The Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way, only on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by friends and members of the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment in San Jose, California, a ministry in the tradition of Kriya Yoga, the ancient science of self and God realization. www.csecenter.org. Request free literature by writing info@csecenter.org.
You're invited to join host Pamela Whitman for The Miracle Revolution, a program featuring music and guided meditations and teachings from A Course in Miracles. Pamela will share how we can return your mind to the one solution that already exists to all of our perceived problems. God has already given us everything. As we remember that we are joined, we claim the miracles that are waiting to be perceived. The Miracle Revolution, Mondays at 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world, and on 91.7 WLFR Pomona, New Jersey, on Mondays from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern.
Inspiration only takes a moment. Take a moment now to reflect on these words from Reverend Joan Gattuso. According to an ancient Hindu teaching, if you can only speak the truth and tell no lies, either minuscule or outrageous, for 12 consecutive years, you can attain enlightenment. A noble being will always tell the truth. Do you? Begin now with the first step of simply noticing if you do tell the truth immediately or if your first instinct is to alter the facts a bit. Resolve to be honest with yourself and others starting today. And after 4,383 days, you just may become enlightened.
This meditative moment is brought to you by Unity.